This is Charlotte Cleary. It's June 27th, 2016. I'm here at the Hudson Lodge with Tom Taylor, interviewing him for the Hudson Area Archives. Tom, thank you for being here. Would you introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Tom Taylor, and it's a pleasure.
Do you wanna tell me a little bit about where you come from?
So, I was born in Florida, and I lived in Florida until about 10 years ago when I moved to New York City, and then 5 years ago I moved to Hudson. I'm a political science major in college, and then I worked in banking and finance in Florida. And then after I moved to New York, I started doing more creative things, and that's what brought me to Hudson.
I'd be interested to hear more about Florida. What do you think about Florida?
I feel like I'm a reverse migration, where a lot of people move from New York to Florida, but I'm kind of glad to have done it in the reverse. New York is more conducive to exploring creativity than Florida is, for the most part. I was in North Florida, which is the more conservative area, and less interested in culture and art and exploration overall. I mean, of course, there would be exceptions, but I like the environment up here better.
How is the environment up here different?
I think there's more diversity, as far as people coming from other countries and other backgrounds. So you have, even though Hudson is a small city, its proximity to New York City means there are a lot of creatives here. So although I didn't specifically choose when I came from Florida to come to Hudson specifically, I am happy to be here.
You said you studied political science?
I did, yes.
I'd like to hear more about it.
I like history. I had thought at one time that I might become an attorney, but for some reason I ended up in banking and finance. One thing led to another, and I ended up in that career for a long time. It's a pleasure now to have been able to transition from that way of making a living to something less restrictive.
Do you feel less restricted now?
Most days. I guess it varies at different times, but yes, overall, very much so. I've forged an non-corporate path after life in the corporate world. So I'm happy to have been able to do that. Of course, there are trade-offs. There's less security when you go a less scripted path.
How are you feeling day to day differently?
Most of the time, very well. I guess there are days when I do miss the regularity of things that I had when I had like a regular paycheck and a rule book, so to speak, to follow. But it's I don't regret my transition.
I'd like to hear about what you're making or what creative endeavors.
Well, the space that we're in now, this used to be an old Elks Lodge, this building. And I work with a woman who bought it right before it went to bankruptcy auction, and it was a total shambles of a collection of a lot of objects. A person who was in the space had bought a lot of things at auction lot and filled it like top to bottom, so it was there was a bit of chaos in this building. And it was quite a process to clear it out and then to see, well, what could become of this space. So we took out drop ceilings and we put a bunch of junk in a warehouse, and it was a long process of figuring, like urban excavation, I guess. So that was one of the projects. Recently, I've been working on a mid-century high school a little bit outside of Hudson. It was built in 52 and then expanded in 62. And eventually that will become a place for public assembly and place for people making things and teaching things in that space. So that's another exciting project. We're also working on an old mill outside of Philmont, and then we've been doing some work on the Pocketbook Factory, which is up the street here. So it's a number of different projects. We typically try to work with existing materials and repurposing objects. So it's not quite the type of job where you would do a drawing of how you want it to turn out, and then you would go shopping for all the elements. We try to use what there is in storage or. Recreate an existing object to fit the need.
Why are you interested in these spaces or urban excavation?
Well, I think of life as a series of changing, like when you have a play and the set changes, you know, to accommodate whatever's going on. So when there are certain changes in life, then your needs, you know, for how you want your environment are different. So it can be the same with the building. If you have a factory building that used to be a sweatshop, it's not likely to be that again or need to be that again here in Hudson. But then, like, what would it become? This place that we're sitting in used to be a private house in 1850. And then the Elks Lodge bought it in 1935, and it was an Elks Lodge until the year 2000. And then it started to be chopped up. So it's being reborn in kind of a quirky way. So I think that I see my life a little bit like that too. So I relate to it because I've had different chapters and can see how that might work for other spaces or other people even.
How do you feel that your needs, environment-wise, have changed since, say, you were in New York?
Well, before I came in, came to New York, I was married to a woman, and I had have three children who have multiple disabilities, and I lived in a suburb, in a suburban tract house. And I worked for a bank, so my needs for my environment at that time were much different than they are now. I'm single, and I work on creative projects, and my environment needs are much different than they were when I was in Florida.
In what ways?
Well, I mean, if you are a parent of a disabled child, you are restricted in certain ways, in that medical insurance is really important, and you might need to have a job that you wouldn't normally want to keep just because of that need. And then your own interests or desires would not be important enough to express because there are other things going on, survival type of things, making sure that there's food on the table and that the medical bills get paid and that everyone is getting what they need. So it's important to put aside who you are to have that have the rest of that take place. So my environment at that time was what it was, and there wasn't a lot of time to think about anything else, really.
Could you tell me about, or walk me through, a day of your life in New York and then a day now?
You mean when I was in Florida and now, or you mean in New York City versus here?
Let's do Florida.
Florida would be, I would get up in the morning and I would go to the gym, and then I would go to the bank. Sometimes I would stay very late at work because I had a stressful job. And then I would come home. At a certain point, my wife wasn't working, so she would be very tired when I would come home, and there'd be kind of like a shift change, so to speak, and she might go check out for a little bit when I came home. That would be like a typical day during the week. Here, I'm working on a lot of different projects, so there's not really a typical day exactly. Today I was at the school early, and we're building a set on the stage in the big gymnasium that has a capacity of 800. So I was checking that out and ordered some supplies for that. Later, I gave a tour of the Pocketbook Factory, somebody who was interested in doing something there. I have somebody, I call him my Edwardian letter writing companion. So I write notes back and forth with him. He lives in the Berkshires. I have a running dialogue with him every day. Although I don't see him maybe only once a week, but we write back and forth. So I wrote to him a little bit. I went to look at some marbleized papers. I went to Grayson, that diner around the corner here. I want to get someone who works there interested in doing something in the old cafeteria in the school. So, well, I go there because I like to go there, but I went there today thinking I might see her. She and her husband might do something in the old cafeteria if we fix that up. And then I talked to my friend who owns these spaces. She's not here all that much, but we talk on the phone a lot about the projects and the spaces, and even like psychological analysis of the different people that we work with or are doing projects with us. So that's not a typical day, but it was a day.
I'd be interested to hear more about this daily dialogue that you have with your friend.
It's interesting because it's been going on for, I think, 4 years now. So it's kind of like we're part of each other's brain a little bit. And it's satisfying to have that kind of continuity with somebody. I guess it's I had continuity in daily family life for a long time, which I don't have now. So that's a little bit of that. So that's like a self-constructed mechanism to establish some of what I had, maybe, or an idealized version of what I had.
What kind of continuity do you have with your friend?
Well, we know each other's stories, and it's like we tell each other what's going on, happy things, sad things, whatever.
Do you feel that it's a different kind of continuity than the kind that you had previously?
It is a different kind. It's a different kind of continuity. It's a different kind of continuity. There's not a formal obligation to do it, but there's an emotional obligation that's been built up over time. So there's that. I don't know what to say about it, but I do look forward to it.
How did it start?
Well, we were dating, and it started then, and then it just continued. So, I don't know what to say. I've never had anything like that, so I don't really know what to say about it.
Are you unsure of how you feel about it?
No. No, I'm sure how I feel about it.
I'd like to hear more about your family or your ex-wife and your kids.
My children are all grown now. My two youngest are, one turned, well, they're 28, 30, and 32 now. My two youngest are emotionally still children, but you know, they're adults now. Mental retardation and physical disability expressing itself in low muscle tone. No health problems, not very good physical mobility. My youngest son talks with a touch talker like Stephen Hawking. And my middle son, he can speak, but if you didn't know him, you might not understand every word. My oldest son is studying environmental engineering in Florida. And he'll be here in August with his girlfriend for a visit. So I'm looking forward to that. He's been here a couple years ago too, and he lived with me. And when I first moved to New York City, he lived with me for a period of time. And my ex-wife is she's doing well. We had it was a difficult time right before our two youngest transitioned into a group home where they live now. In that it's hard. Florida isn't so well funded for social services, so it was difficult to find a place for them. And it was difficult. They had home health care aides coming into the home, but it's still difficult to take care of adult children, especially with physical disabilities, because they're grown, so they're heavy, and sometimes they need to be picked up or stabilized, and that can be tough. But luckily, there was an opening in a group home at the same time a couple of years ago, I guess 3 years ago now. So that was really lucky. An Austrian filmmaker is doing a film about our transition as a family to I haven't seen it yet. I saw 15 minutes of it, but I think it may be done next month.
What was it like watching the 15 minutes of footage?
It was the part that I saw was filmed 5 years ago, so it was it was easier seeing something like that as a historical document than if it had been filmed yesterday or something like that. Enough time has passed where I guess I was okay. I was okay with it. So the man who's doing it, it's interesting. He's the same age as my children, like right in the middle. He's 30. So when I gave permission for him to do this, starting 6 years ago, I had the feeling that I could learn something by seeing myself through somebody else's eyes, especially somebody who's a contemporary of theirs, you know, my children's, kind of see what he might show me. Being Austrian, well, I mean, you can't generalize, but he's, as many Austrians are, he's a sensitive observer. And that shows up in his filmmaking. So, although it's a little scary, you know, that you put yourself out there. I'm somewhat of a shy person, so the other idea that I had is there might be some things that I would be able to say that to an audience that I wouldn't have the platform to say, or I don't know, just feel like I could say it.
Like?
Well, I think there are things in our society that are harder than should be. like if you are a parent of a disabled child, in a lot of ways you have to not exactly fend for yourself, but a little bit fend for yourself. In that it's not an automatic thing that you would be getting what you need. So that's one thing. The other thing is, part of our story was that, in the midst of raising our children, we ended up, pregnant and expecting another child. And although it's not presumed, it's not identified as being genetic, what's going on with our children, it's presumed to be because everything's been excluded. So we decided to have an abortion. I think it's difficult everywhere, but particularly in the South, people will gather and really want to, you know, judge you and make you feel like a really terrible person. So, you know, when I hear today the Supreme Court had a decision that said to Texas, you can't make it impossible for these abortion clinics to stay open, I was very happy to hear that. Not that I think that abortion is the preferred thing to happen, but you know, sometimes it's better, you know, than for a family that could be destroyed if you take on too much. So that was one thing. And then the other thing is, part of my transition to come from Florida to New York involved expressing the other part of my sexuality, which I'm more drawn to men than to women. And that's something also that's made very difficult in our society, where people aren't really left to their own ideas about, you know, what they're able to do. It's a little bit easier now, but only easier in well-educated circles, and even sometimes not easier in well-educated circles. So those are the issues that, you know, I don't know what Axel, the filmmaker, will come up with, but those are issues that come to mind, you know, about things that are made harder for people in society than should be.
You said that if you were shown that footage earlier, you said when you were shown the footage, it had been a certain amount of time, and so that you felt okay with it. How do you think you would have felt watching it if it was around the time that it was being filmed?
Well, I think I might have been a little bit alarmed and overexposed. I think maybe I've gained a little bit of confidence since then about my path, and everyone, like all the members of my family, are in better shape than they were when the filming started. Better shape meaning my two youngest in a group home, and my ex-wife feeling more confident about what she's doing, and that everyone's kind of, I don't know, on a better footing than was true. There was a lot of unknown when Axel was filming early on, so I wouldn't have necessarily wanted people to see all that struggle without knowing what it led to or was going to lead to.
do you think you've gained more confidence?
Well, I don't feel more confident every day, but I guess I think just because I don't know, feeling like I'm doing the right thing, right things, and yeah, it's difficult to say how that works. Finishing projects, I don't know, even writing to my friend, I think that's like journaling in a way, but it's interactive, so it's not in a vacuum. And sometimes he needs me to listen to him, and sometimes I need him to listen to me. So I think that's helped a lot.
So you think that everyone who's in the documentary is in a more stable place, or you told me some.
Well, like one of the things, my two youngest, Mark and Tim, when you have a child you know will never be able to take care of themselves, it's quite frightening early on, because you wonder, well, you can't live forever. Who's going to watch after them when you're not around? And will they be safe in that environment when you're not there to advocate for them? I feel they're in a good, well-run home. If your communication skills are really low and your IQ is low, you would not be considered maybe a valid a valid person to, like, if you had a complaint, you might not be taken seriously. You could easily be taken advantage of, abused, or ignored, even if you were in trouble. So as a parent, that's terrifying. You know, it's when they're a little baby, you can, you know, do everything for them, be there whenever, you know, and make sure everything's perfect or as perfect as you can. So I do feel that they're in a good place, and in a safe place. So that's very good, and that's a weight off of my mind, and a weight off of my ex-wife Elizabeth's mind. And then also, in a way, that gives you permission to do things for yourself that you didn't feel like you had permission, or that it was important enough to do.
What kinds of things are you doing for yourself?
Well, you know, sometimes I make art, and my projects are really organic, so it's I'm in a place where I can I don't know, decide how to arrange things. Like, I built a set on a stage. There's nothing scheduled for that stage yet, but so it's preparing for something that hasn't happened yet, and I'm guessing it might happen. So it's a total, seems like luxurious to be able to do something like that.
How was it transitioning from a more scripted life to having that freedom?
Well, it wasn't, I didn't come to New York with the plan that ended up playing out. So, although it doesn't feel chaotic now, there were periods of chaos in putting, you know, getting from there to here, and then also the emotional transition of leaving my family was not an easy thing. So there was a period of time that I was a week in Florida and then 3 weeks in New York, and I had an apartment down there and an apartment up here. I mean, it all worked out in a funny sort of way, but it certainly wasn't a scripted sort of way where the job I have, so to speak, is not really a job. It's a job I made for myself, I guess, by, you know, it's definitely not a corporate job. So, yeah, the transition, things are still transitioning in a way, I guess. It's always good, I think, to think of your life as a transition, you know, even if you're not specifically in a transition. Like, what do you want to, how do you want things to be?
How do you think transition plays into the things you make, if at all?
Well, I mean, it. I work with a lot of objects that I kind of place in different contexts, either in my art or when I'm putting together a space, and I like the idea of reinventing an object, and even if other people don't know where that object came from, it's interesting to me when something comes from one context into another and has another life. There's some Pierce panels in the hallway out there that used to be in a Japanese sushi restaurant in the West Village. That chandelier came from a townhouse in Long Island City. These concrete flowers were from a rooftop in Long Island City. The woman I work with, she used to do decorating for diplomats' apartments in the 60s and 70s and 80s. There's a box that she made herself for the Iraqi ambassador, and it's on a dresser upstairs. So, I mean, if you look at these objects, you don't really read all that history, but I know it, and it's interesting to know the stories and how environments get built with these objects that have echoes of other memories, you know, from where they came from. And then, you know, someday this room will be taken apart and something else will come in here. So it's only, you know, everything we do is really kind of temporary for a season or, you know, a person's lifespan, and then it's kind of dispersed. But what can happen in that space and during that time, it can be really interesting.
Interesting in what ways?
Well, it's interesting when you pay attention, you know, to those things. Sometimes I think people go too hurriedly through life, and they may not pay attention to the important things. I don't know. I like thinking about history of objects and lives, and thinking about where you've been and where you want to be.
Where do you want to be?
This is good. This is good right now, right here. I don't know. I've done a bit of traveling in the last couple of years. Not a whole lot, but I went to China a couple months ago. We have been working with this man from Beijing who has an art gallery there who might want to do something in Hudson. So I went to see his art gallery. It was quite interesting to see like a whole different culture and environment. I don't know. I'm happy with Hudson right now.
What are your thoughts on Hudson as an area?
I think it's very good. Any place can be anything. When I first came to New York City was my quiet place to think, which you don't really think of New York City as a quiet place to think, but it really was for me. Hudson can be a quiet place or an interesting place or an unusual number of people with fascinating stories in Hudson for sure. A density of that you wouldn't necessarily expect when you just kind of breeze through town. So it continues to unfold.
When you say that New York used to be your quiet place to think, what do you mean by that?
I grew up in Florida, and so it had certain attachments and memories. So when I came to New York, I was starting a new life, so I was somewhat anonymous in that way. So it was quiet. From that standpoint, I didn't really have to explain myself or tell my story unless I wanted to. I think New York can definitely be that way. It's very busy, but I think it can be quiet because you can be anybody you want to be. I read something, an article about this man who, he was born a slave in Texas in 1870 something, and in the 1870s, he was born a slave, but in the 1870s he moved to New York City, and he reinvented himself as a Mexican millionaire. And he was able to come to New York and be a completely different person, where if he had stayed in Texas, he would always be seen as, from slavery and subject to all that discrimination. So he's the most, he became who he wanted to be. And that was in New York, although that was a long time ago, but in the Gilded Age, he was one of the early people on Wall Street who kind of made it big.
How do you think, if you were coming to New York to not have to tell your story or not have to be seen in this way? How do you think you were being seen, or how did you feel in Florida?
Well, I mean, I was coming from a period of isolation, in that if you are a parent of a disabled child, you tend to not socialize as much. I hate to be stereotypical, but I think that tends to happen, in that you're dealing with a lot of difficult, sad things. So you're not, and I don't know how other people deal with it, but we didn't have people over for dinner, and we didn't go out really very much. and I was doing a difficult job, and I was a collections manager. So I was dealing with fraud and forgery and repossession and foreclosure and all these really, you know, stressful things. So I tended to keep to myself. Coming to New York, it was interesting. My first reaction, well, I moved to Chelsea, and my first reaction was everybody around me was so spoiled. You know, the least little thing, annoyance, or, you know, this dinner's not cooked right, or, I don't know, just everything seemed to be a complaint, and, you know, that person's dressed badly, or this one, you know, it just seemed, everything seemed really superficial to me, at first. I was happy that there was dinner. You know, I guess the early part of that transition's kind of long past, but I guess I felt that early on, that there were people around me were really spoiled, like an embarrassment of riches that they weren't really seeing.
How do you feel you were being seen at that time?
I have no idea. I think I think people still have difficulty categorizing me, so that can make people anxious, or they can't, you know, quite put me in a particular category. So yeah, I don't have a typical path. I guess I try not to worry about it. Go about my business.
Category is an interesting word. What do you think people are kind of reading you, trying to put you into a certain category, or?
I think we all, you know, we all read each other. It's, you know, there's some safety elements of it, and then also, like, you would like to determine, do you want to know that person or not? You know, so I mean, it, that goes on with all of us. You know, when we see someone, we want to know, well, do I think I would like them, or are they, would it be great to know them? Is it dangerous to know them? You know, do I feel like I don't want to bother at all? I don't know if you ever saw Terminator, that computer would go through all the processing, would just click, 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 like to friend or foe kind of thing. So I think we all do that.
You mentioned earlier that guy who became the person he wanted to be and kind of reinvented himself. Do you think you are the person you want to be, or who is the who is the person you want to be?
Well, I think I'm becoming that person. I guess I'm frustrated about that, and reinvention takes a lot of energy, and I'm somewhat of an introvert, so I go through periods of time when I'm less social than others. So I think that's true with a lot of introverts. So I hope that I'll continue to grow. I do think that I'm growing. I don't think I'm grown.
You talked about the isolation that you felt in Florida, but also saying that you're an introvert. How do you feel now spending time alone?
I like it. I mean, I enjoy, it's a way for me to recharge. I interact with a wide variety of people. Sometimes I enjoy downtime just to, recharge.
In what ways do you socialize?
I'm totally antisocial. I never socialize. I go out to dinner, and I like to visit somebody's art studio, or I interact with a fairly large number of people when I'm like showing them the spaces I'm working on and that sort of thing. So it varies.
Varies in what way?
It varies based on what's going on. Like when I went to China, I was socializing, and I met a large number of people, and I had heard about a group of people who were doing something in Southeast China, and I got myself invited, so I got to meet them. So I guess I socialize as an exploration about how other people are.
Are you exploring anyone currently?
it's ongoing.
Ongoing.
Yeah, I mean, when I, you know, if I, yeah, I mean, I spend. Spend time when I spend time with people I do I guess I'm I like quiet explorations rather than some people come into a room or a situation and they're really loud and boisterous and you know and then they're gone, and I guess I'm my explorations are more quiet, you know. I like listening to people, and I don't know.
Quiet explorations.
Well, I mean, for instance, okay, tomorrow night there's a documentary about a parent who has a disabled child, and I'm really interested in seeing that, how it's put together, and to I think I'll meet her. So I'm interested in that from a couple of standpoints, like how were things for her in that situation? And then also, how is that film approached? So I'm looking forward to that. So I'll most likely do more listening than I may or may not speak about it, but I'm definitely interested in seeing what that's about.
Yeah, why wouldn't you speak about it? Just
Well, I mean, I don't know what what the form. I don't want to prejudge what the environment might be like or what I'll feel like tomorrow about, how that evening progresses.
I'd like to hear more about what goes on in this space, I guess.
Oh, in this space? So this space is evolving. We've had Film Columbia Film Festival has been in the space for a couple years now. ETSI's done some corporate parties here and breakout sessions. We've had some weddings, some fundraisers. Someone did a reading for a play for investors to see if they wanted to produce the play. Different things like that. It also functions as a house in, at certain times in the upstairs rooms. So it's evolving as a space, but it's coming together.
I'm curious also about more objects that you have reinvented or repurposed. Which ones come to mind?
I make art as well, and some of the pieces are autobiographical. I have the space in Long Island City I refer to as the Art Cave, and it's been in place for 4 years now, but it's got like I do art that's paint and resin on canvas or board and small objects, and they tell stories about different chapters in my life. So it's that it's two rooms, and it stay I don't go there very often anymore, but it stays in place there. And it's got I don't know, all my stories on the walls, kind of in installations. So they're all objects that relate to the story. As far as in the space, there are like in the kitchen, there's some shutters that we made into a wall, and the shutters came from Harlem. There's some frames that were from an old hotel that was being remodeled that showed up at the building in Long Island City, and they ended up here. Different. Some of the furniture in this room are from clients, from the diplomat clients, like the sofa and this table.
You said that the paintings or works that you make relate to different chapters in your life. I'd like to know more about how you start working on something.
Well, I collect I collect the objects ahead of time, and I categorize them in bins and boxes and little drawers. I like these old apothecary chests and also machinists' tool cabinets that have lots of little drawers. So I collect the objects and put them by category. It might be old watches or when I lived in a converted warehouse in Williamsburg for a while, and I had a couple of roommates who were models, and one of them had this purse with plastic jewels on it. So she threw that out, and I cut off the jewels, and I have them in a drawer. I don't know if I would ever use those, but they're all categorized, and it might be watch crystals, or I had a bag with my children's baby teeth that I'd carried with me, and I ended up using those in a piece. My son, oldest son, was in a punk rock band, and he had a mohawk for a period of time, and when he cut off his spikes, he gave me one. So I have that in a little drawer in the art cave. I don't know what it's fine that it's in this little drawer there. It doesn't really need to be in an art piece or anything really, but I know exactly where it is, and it's important to me for no reason other than remembering where it came from and that he wanted me to have it, which was interesting because he was really wildly expressing himself and at that time, and that was when I was deep in the banking world, so it was almost like he was encouraging me.